Yeah, I'm so disorganized.
I'm here today in beautiful downtown Highland Park, which is northeast Los Angeles, and I'm with Oscar Duardo, and Oscar is part of really, I think of you as part of the local art scene. You know, your brother was certainly part of the Highland Park art scene.
In the 70s and 80s.
So yeah. People in Highland Park might be familiar with that. And what Oscar has done here is created a community garden, which he started about 10 years ago. And this is a place where the bums and the hobos and the winos used to hang out. I mean, that's my memory 20-some years ago. And this is a little back alley behind the Highland Park Theater. And if you know Highland Park, across the street from Mr. T's and Frank's Camera. Oscar and his partners have called it the Milagro Alegro Community Garden. You could actually look at images at hpgarden.org. But thanks for allowing me to come here today, Oscar.
Well, thanks for coming up with the idea. It's a great idea, and hopefully it'll be informative and reach out to a larger audience.
I hope so too, and I hope it gives the other people listening the idea to maybe do what you did and start a community garden. Because I know some of the gardens that I've heard about, people like to get there and chat, and it's a great place to meet your neighbors. But this is really lower income neighborhood, and I suspect a lot of the folks that are gardening here, this is important, isn't it?
Well, yeah, we're primarily a lower income, underserved community, and so the emphasis for myself and some of the organizers was to address that need.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of the methods that we initially established to address that need was by the very way people were allowed to enroll or sign up in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And that was through a lottery system it was a lottery system so that we could include anybody.
Okay.
We didn't have a limit, you know, as to the parameters. But what we did was we slanted it towards favoring the closer you live to the garden.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, which was just basically, if you're within a two-block radius, you could put your name in three times. If you were in Highland Park, you could put your name in twice, and then anywhere else, you put your name in once.
And this is a lottery for basically 30 spaces you have here that people can use?
30 plots. There's actually about 29 available for the general community.
Mm-hmm.
And two for education.
Do you emphasize or favor people who are apartment dwellers?
No, that's basically the way we figured that there were plenty of apartments within that two-block radius, and that gave them three tickets is quite an edge.
Okay.
As opposed to,
I gotcha.
Yeah. However, we've changed that since this year is the first year we're just doing a general. Everybody only gets to put their name in once, and we're just doing Highland Park. Well, actually, the 942 areas.
Mm-hmm.
Zip code.
So those of you not familiar with L.A., 90042 is almost extremely northeast edge of Los Angeles. To the north is Eagle Rock, and that borders on Pasadena. So we're sort of in a little valley here. We've got downtown L.A. to our south. We can see the mountains. We've got South Pasadena. You've got a lot of communities around here, and people would treasure something like this. Now, when I got here today, Oscar, we started talking a little bit before taping about the history of this spot, and I thought that was pretty interesting. So I remember, because I moved into Highland Park in the late 70s, this was an old house, and then what happened?
Well, there was a bungalow house here that I assume the owner failed to pay taxes on or whatever, and the city obtained it, and it was kind of a just an abandoned bungalow house that was being used a lot by, the usual suspects, drug addicts.
All right. People just hanging out in there.
Yeah. So eventually the city decided to do something, get rid of it, and they allowed the fire department to have a practice run and burn it down. And
they had a lot of fun that day.
And put it out, and that's what they did. And then they cleaned up all the charred, and it was just an abandoned lot.
That was 20 years ago.
That was over 20 years ago. Uh-huh. That was like 1980.
Okay,
so
they're almost over 30.
30
yeah.
years, you know.
And we're talking about a parcel that's what, maybe
this parcel is exactly 50 feet.
Okay, wide
by 200 feet.
50 by 200.
So
okay.
So it's 10,000 square feet approximately.
It's like an average house lot, really.
And And I think that comes out to like a quarter acre. I don't know.
Okay, and so then they burnt the house down, and then this wasn't fenced, so people parked their cars here and threw their junk here for a while, right?
Yeah, it was mostly used for parking. I think the theater got a lot of use out of it for their customers, but the general businesses, Valerio's, Italian, you know, restaurant, got a lot of...
But so it was unpaved.
Overflow, yeah, it was always unpaved. It never got paved by the city once they took over ownership of it. So it was always unpaved and primarily just used for excessive parking when the two parking lots on the adjacent sides were overflowed. So it was useful in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
It was very useful. I got a lot of use out of it personally.
Yeah, that's good.
But then after 20 years, they decided to fence it off with a chain link fence and razor wires. I don't
so
know
that
what they were protecting.
Some 10 years ago.
So that would have been like the late 90s, you know.
Okay.
It might have been, you know.
And there's barbed wire around the edge still.
We kept the barbed wire on the top because it's difficult to remove. We were able to obtain a national grant, and remove the chain link fence and put up a more viewer-friendly, artistic wrought iron. It's meant to look like a reed kind of a style fence.
I hadn't really noticed, but it's actually a very attractive fence. There is the barbed wire at the top to keep people out, I guess, and coyotes and whatever, but it is an attractive fence. So you got a grant to do that. That's good.
Yeah, we were able to obtain a national grant, which is kind of surprising because, those are very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea with the fencing was I actually saw this style somewhere, and I really liked it because it had a kind of a... If you could ever say it was kind of like more inviting fence, if there's
mm-hmm.
such a
you know
oxymoron, but the idea was we wanted to green as much of the property as possible, and so we lined it with fruit trees.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a lot of peaches, apricots, plums, nectarines, apples.
But before you get too far ahead of yourself, this was an empty lot. And the city put a fence on it. You just didn't come in here and start gardening. What'd you do?
Right. So the beginning of the process was once again, I had been just like, you know, I've lived here for 46
mm-hmm.
years. We've lived out, my family has lived out. I've lived in Eagle Rock and other locations,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, I'm always come back to Highland Park.
The family is a staple of the community.
Right? Yeah, we're pretty much a fixture mm-hmm. around here. So anyway, after years and years of just wondering, you know, the city would have to come in and weed it and you know, maintain it in that terms, but there was, you know, it just seemed like a very, very waste of resources. So I would just mention it to people, friends, neighbors, we should put a garden there, a garden should be there, or somebody should put a garden there. And it just got to the point where it was like, nobody's going to do it unless you do it, you know, it just happened that a few years before Nicole Gatto moved into the neighborhood with her sister, and they bought a house just 60 yards from the garden. And she is very much an environmental green type person and loves growing food and kind of comes from that tradition. So I've got to know her, and we take some walks with her dog around the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And she, as we were walking back one afternoon, we're walking right past the garden or the empty lot.
The garden, yeah.
The feature garden, and we just looked at each other simultaneously, and said, "We should put a garden right here." And you know, I had said it over and over to many people throughout the years, but for some reason that. At that instant, I knew there was something that was different. There was an energy that was different, and something was going to come out of that exchange. And sure enough, a week later, she called me and she says, "Okay, the meeting's at my house on Tuesday evening at 6 o'clock.
And like, that was with who? Local councilmen or who?
No, that was just community, residents.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's good. Okay.
And I was like, "What meeting?" And she's like, "The meeting about the garden we want to put up." And I'm like, "Oh, okay. All right, I'll be there.
So step one, tell everybody the plan.
Right? Well, she didn't even tell me she was going to put a meeting. I, you know, it was kind of like, yeah, we should get some neighbors together and talk about it and stuff like that. But she jumped, you know, head first in, organized this meeting, got some of the shakers and movers of the neighborhood. And sure enough, we met there. I invited my friend who's a, you know, certified arborist and has always wanted to do a garden. We've always talked about doing it. We've been friends for like 35 years. So I included him. He lives in South Pass. But everybody else was from the emetic community, right within the two-block radius of the garden. So that was the start. From there, the suggestions from that meeting were run a petition from the immediate community, get signatures, get endorsements from businesses, organizations, from the community, and take all that and put a proposal together and take it to the councilman's office and start there. That's step one.
What councilman would that have been back then?
Andreas,
okay.
Yeah. Andreas was his office, especially the deputy for this area at that time, and forgive me, but I forget her name because I have such a bad memory.
Right.
It'll come to me.
But
his office was very, very open to the idea and very supportive.
Good.
And just like they, you know, I'm sure they did a background check on us.
Okay, right.
And
they saw
did a little research.
Pillars of the community.
Yeah, well, you know,
more or less.
Nicole's quite a, you know, she has a PhD in preventive medicine, and she's quite the gal when it comes.
So, from the city's point of view, they were really more interested in the people rather than the idea, in a sense, right? Because you were going to take city land, or proposing to, and make this garden. So they checked you guys out, make sure you guys were square.
I'm assuming that.
Oh,
actually, when someone from the office said they did that in a joking way, and I was like, well, you know, I mean, I'm sure they do something like that, you know, and so on. But that was besides the point. They were on board from day one. The only question was, they didn't have jurisdiction over the property. Department of Transportation is, which is the parking department,
and they
all they could do was say they were behind it and put the weight of their endorsement behind it, and that they were working with us, and they did. They wrote some really great letters, and that I think got us to the point where we were able to meet with the DOT, and you know, they were very receptive when we met with them the first time, and I doubt that I'll ever be in a project with the city that runs as smoothly as this. Yeah, that was one of the reasons why we called it the Milagro Allegro.
Oh, okay, the Milagro Allegro, the happy miracle.
Yeah, it was quite, you know, I was just like, in the beginning, there's always, you know, this time thing with the city. It just doesn't happen. So we started in February of 08. And it wasn't until November of that year that we were finally told, yeah, this looks like it's going to happen. So when I say we started, like our first meeting was like in February. And then a couple weeks later we approached the councilman and they're like, yeah, we think this is a good idea, but you know, it's going to, you know, take some time. And they would say, it's going to happen. And I'm like, yeah, but is it going to happen in city time? Like that translates to like, you know,
years.
Dog years.
Yeah. So did you have to bring in a plan or a proposal when you met with Department of Transportation?
Well, we had already had that when we met before. Before when we met.
Like you made a sketch of the lot and what you proposed to do?
Yeah, I did the drawings. I did the design of the layout of the property and all the dimensions and how many plots would be, you know, used, and how many people, you know, and how we would also designate areas for education. We've had schools here, one of the students and Loreto Elementary School students.
What do the school children do when they come here?
Well,
just walk them on tours?
Well, there's been, our first day we had just like six or seven different activities for them to do, all the way from like, go and find some of the vegetables that you are familiar with and draw them. And then we did some juicing, told them a little about juicing. We had them build a couple plots out of you know, pre-cut lumber so they could see what it was like to build the raised beds. Mm-hmm. Fill them up with soil. We went through a composting demonstration with them, okay, where they actually got involved in you know, turning the compost and layering it so that it they would understand how a compost actually starts. They painted the tool shed, which was very attractive. Uh-huh. They were involved in the beautification.
How many students were you able to accommodate at one time?
Well,
working here?
In that particular event, it was the whole fifth grade class, which I think was like 30 students.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good. That
and
works
and
well.
One of our board members, founding board members, Matt Meem, is also a student, uh-huh, fifth grade teacher.
At
he used to be at the school Loreto, and that was his class that uh-huh came, Loreto Elementary, but now he's in South Central somewhere.
So if somebody wanted to do what you did, and they had a lot, I mean, you have a plan, you get the neighbors involved, you drop some sketches, and then you approach the local officials, and then you have a lot of patience. And then at some point they said, yes, it's yours. Now, basically, still Department of Transportation land, I presume, right? And they're just
absolutely
letting, and so they're letting you use it, yeah, and making sure you do a good job. At some point, I mean, I see you've got all these raised beds. They're very well constructed. You've got, like, trellises made of wrought iron and stuff, and you've got some sheds, and you had to bring the soil in for the raised beds. Did you get donations? Or we're sitting in this circle in the middle, which is a great little community place. Looks like it's well-made. Looks like it's made to last outdoors for generations. Did you get donations, or just everybody had to pitch in and buy a lot of this stuff?
Well, it was a confluence of support from the councilman's office, support from the city, support from the neighborhood council. I think they gave us our initial first funding, which was $5,500.
Oh, that's good.
The councilman gave us $10,000 access to tools and equipment at Home Depot. Home Depot themselves donated. So we got a lot of support from the city in terms of, like, they actually graded the property for us with heavy duty equipment.
Oh, they graded it. Okay, I was thinking like school grades. They gave you A, B, or C.
No, they graded it. Okay. They graded the property with it wasn't as level as it looks now.
Uh-huh.
And I was just like not looking forward to leveling it by hand.
Oh, yeah.
And at the last minute, I think it was Bill something from Street Services just said, hey, we got a half a day where we could send down a crew.
Thank you, Bill, from Street Services.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that saved me, you know, weeks of labor. So all in all, that's, once again, it goes back to the name of the garden, because it was just all this goodwill and people just love the idea. I guess being that it was the first, and it still is the first, Highland Park Community Garden.
There aren't any others around here?
Not in Highland Park.
Are there in Eagle Rock?
Yeah, Eagle Rock has theirs.
Down in Lincoln Heights, I think there's
Washington
one.
Washington has one. Lincoln, uh-huh, El Sereno has, uh-huh, theirs. They're trying to get another one here at the park, but that's under Parks and Rec's jurisdiction, and I think for, uh-huh, some reason they're having, it's a lot slower process. I have to admit, even though for us we felt like we waited from February to November, and that still is fast. That's lightning fast for city time.
Like 9 months, right?
Yeah, that's lightning fast for something of this kind of magnitude. Where, mm-hmm, even though it's not a huge piece of property, it's just that our understanding was that particular department was never very easy to lend out their land for anything other than bringing in, you know, revenue for, mm-hmm, you know, and the city being as strapped as it's been, you know, so it was, you know, that, once again, it goes back to why I decided. One day I talked to Nicole and I said, I think I got the right name for the garden. And she said, what? And then I said, well, Milagro, because it's like all these little miracles just seem to, like, fall right into a place for us, for this thing to, you know, move along at a, you know, at a steady clip. And she was like, I think you're right, because she agreed that it was just pretty miraculous the way it comes. I doubt anybody would ever have the same kind of, you know, success in terms of the timing of things and just the serendipitous you know, incidents that happened over and over again. That was just so, it was a magical year. Mm-hmm. The first year of this garden was really, really a magical year.
Once they said it was yours, how long did it take, for example, to get the beds built? Somebody built all these beds, you know, you got 4x4 posts and
well, they're very
bolted.
Simply designed and mm-hmm. Constructed. It was just, we went overboard with the thickness of the wood because mm-hmm. we didn't want to have to come back and you know, do repairs mm-hmm. or replace it. And we just thought the heavier look would not only serve us in the long run in terms of durability, but it looks good. They look good, and we spent time putting stain on them and the brackets. And we just used the wood as they came. They came in 12-foot lengths, or 4x6.
So every plot's about 12x12?
12x6.
Oh, I see.
So we only had to make one cut on some of the wood, half the wood to.
Oh, I see. 12x6.
And then the brackets were some heavy-duty brackets mm-hmm. that we knew wouldn't, you know, come apart, and with some heavy-duty, you know, nuts and bolts, and then the rebar idea for the trellises was like, well, that's not gonna come down mm-hmm. or come loose. Just drilled a hole right into the lumber. Bent the rebar, and they go 6 feet high by 6 feet across.
And the screening that's in the rebar to grow your peas and things on, is that like what's called plumber's fencing, or there's a term for that? It's like
no,
large.
It's actually what they use for reinforcement for concrete mesh.
Okay, when you lay down a slab.
A slab, a driveway.
So that's going to last you years and years.
Yeah, and that idea also was so you could reach through the trellis to the other side if you have it on one side and your tomatoes are you know, growing on the other side, and you know there's plenty of room for the vine to grow, but also for your hand to fit through.
So it looks like most of the plots have one. Not all, but it looks like many of them have that growing.
Most of them have them, and they'll all have them at some point, mm-hmm. at least one. Some of them have two. Some of them have them going the 12-foot length. Some of them have them going across on the mm-hmm. 6-foot length. It's kind of the preference of the gardener. I've had gardeners actually ask me to change the direction of them,
uh-huh.
which isn't an easy chore in itself. But
right. Oh, I see, because they're established right into the 4x4s.
The 4x4s, and with water, the wood kind of expands, and it's hard to pull them out. We got to actually put a jack on them mm-hmm. and pull them out one side at a time.
So I
kind of asked them to like try and work with what's
there.
Unless they're really, really insistent, I go ahead and I move them for them. Mm-hmm. But I usually ask them, okay, if you're going to want that, you're going to help me do it so you can see how many hours it actually takes.
Right.
To move your trellis, you know.
But you didn't build all these yourself. Did you have helpers?
No. We had a crew of the Los Angeles Conservation Corps come for 2 weeks.
Oh, really? 2 weeks?
Yeah. But that wasn't sufficient, you know. A lot of it was I had to pre-do,
mm-hmm.
and it was still more work than it seems. I know it looks very simple, you know, and whatnot, but it was the two hottest weeks of the year. It was like 105 degrees, and these are young men and women who aren't used to that kind of heavy duty, you know,
right.
on top of the hottest days of the year. So it was
simplicity makes it beautiful. You
know? It is the simplicity that makes it maintenance free almost,
mm-hmm.
and I love the fact that people recognize that. You don't recognize it. It's when you don't recognize it that you realize.
That's right. People almost take it for granted walking mm-hmm. by. Now, just so people get a picture, this is like an east-west aligned lot, and there's like one, two, three. There's three rows.
Four
rows of plots with three rows to walk through, and then in the middle we're sitting kind of right in the middle. There's this big circle made of cement, and that must have taken you a while to build that.
No, the circle is decomposed granite.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, this washes away over years.
Oh, I mean the circle, but it's lined with a stone wall.
The stone wall. Yeah, these rocks were half of them were donated by the Conservation Corps.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot that they didn't need, so they delivered those. And the other half we went and we handpicked them from the arroyo when they were doing that big trenching of changing the water pipe or putting in a new...
Oh, over in Pasadena?
No, right here.
Oh, right here in Highland Park?
Uh-huh. Right, starting from like Avenue 45 to all the way to the bridge over here before you go into Pasadena.
Huh.
South Pasadena.
I know what you're talking about now.
That was two years ago. And so when I saw those rocks, they gave us access to them for the first few months. But then I guess too many people were going into their construction site and taking rocks and maybe wasn't asking them. So they cut it off. Then we had to go through the city and ask them to let us get some more rocks, and they were like, "We'll deliver them to you." And I says, "No, I don't want rocks I can't use."
Because that would be their dumping site, wouldn't it? Maybe.
No, it's just that you're looking for a certain kind of rock.
I see.
Flat rock. You don't want round rocks. You want them flat, so they have a side that'll kind of make a wall.
And so what we have is a round circle for presentations, and there's like a one large half circle of a wall, and then two quarter circles, so you have this big enclosure. And this must have taken you a while to do. It's like 2-3 feet high, but it's what, 30 feet across?
It's supposed to be 20 inches high by 20 inches wide, but we kind of sometimes didn't stick to our dimensions really well. I've built rocks for Northeast Trees, rock walls, and my house, and so I had a little bit of experience. But the thing is, people wanted to be involved in it, and it's such a fun kind of project that I had all these volunteers, and sometimes you can't watch every one of them, so that would be like, no, you don't want to put that kind, and I didn't want to become like the rock cop, you know.
Right. So it looks good, though. I mean, it
looks good. It's not finished. We actually have a grant to continue the surface, and that's going to be the bench, the sitting section on top.
Okay.
And those will be of artistic rocks, I mean, tiles that'll be silk screened with images of the different stages.
Oh, so the wall here will be a bench.
The wall is meant to be a place where people could sit. In the meantime, what we did for events was we topped it off with just hay, and that was actually gonna. I do have a concern that, you know, a tile flat surface is gonna be hard and cold for some people, you know. But we'll have some cushions if they're. You have the, you know.
And this little circle we're in. On the wall, there's some tubing. What is that for? For umbrella?
Okay, yeah. So we also, in the summer, which I think we're going to have a long, hot one this year, is designed for putting in some pipes and supports for shade.
I see. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
So those are embedded into a solid, you know, the walls are solid, filled solid with cement and rock. And there's plenty of support there. I just haven't finished the design of how that's going to look. I keep playing with different ideas. It takes a while. I'm also, on the sides of the wall, you'll see patterns of different shapes of things. And those will be tiles that will also be placed on the wall that people could see as they're passing the garden. And so...
Oh, so in other words, this looks like a leaf or a...
Yeah,
agave,
like a
but you're gonna a cactus.
Yeah.
You're gonna put something over that.
That'll be tiled
with
the same kind of design that we're doing on the seating part, which will have photographic images of different people and different stages of the garden. And it's just the beautification of the garden. I know there's a lot of people who. Unfortunately, I ask them over and over. I know they're from the community, and they walk by here taking their kids to school and back, and I ask them to put an application in, and they say, no, they're not interested. And I'm like, there's that part of the community that... But I've heard her daughter say, oh, it looks so pretty, and you know, I like that. And so I know that they're, even if they're not in the garden participating, the beautification of it is a part that I think can... you know, be of benefit to the community.
People walking by the alley see it and enjoy it, of course.
Yeah.
Now,
and that's why the design of the fence is actually so open, so that people can reach in and pick some of the fruit from the fruit trees that line the garden. So that if that's their only way they want to participate, then have at
it.
And I let the gardeners know, don't shoo away people. I mean, I hope they don't take them all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you know they're taking two or three peaches or apples, it's like.
But the fruit essentially, you planted the fruit for the community. They're not the plot owner.
No. And we try and you know it's just that like anything when you become a. When you've gone through the process and you've been selected the way we've designed it, you kind of feel a sense of taking care of it, and and ownership, and we want to encourage that, you know. But at the same time, I remind them that there's a reason why that chain link fence came down, and we put a fence where you can reach in, and that's for people to feel. It might be their only time they've ever eaten a organic apple or peach or something, and they're really good, let me tell you.
Now, how often do the gardeners come here to do their work in 10 minute blocks?
You know, it's seasonal, and during the winter months, they're not out as much, even though we don't have a very cold winter. And as you can see, if you're really active, some of them are knowledgeable enough to know that Southern California weather is not typical, you know, your average, you know, national weather. So,
well, like today it's winter and it's, what, 80 degrees out here?
Yeah, we were anticipating rain.
I know. We were talking about how to get out of the rain.
Stay dry and stay warm. And it's like, you know, we could have been in shorts.
Yeah.
So, so I try and tell them, you know, but the thing is, we don't want to be pushy and like you have to. We do have a rule where if you abandoned your plot for several months, then you'll be given a warning and asked to, you know, if you're not gonna
let somebody else use it. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're not gonna really take full advantage of it.
But everything now looks like it's pretty well used. I mean, I see artichoke and collards and peas. And mallow, you know, various edible weeds and flowers and, I don't know, tomatoes and peppers and nasturtium, onions and lettuce. I mean, I do see, like over here, a lot of fresh lettuce. And so people are obviously working, even though this is so-called winter, you know. Carrots I see over there. Looks much better than my garden, as a matter of fact. Mine, all the gophers eat everything, and it just, it's mostly weeds that I end up, you know, eating.
Yeah, that's funny. I hear that a lot, people having problems with gophers. We have one squirrel or possum or, I don't know, raccoon that comes in at night and burrows holes. But it only does it in the walkways. It doesn't go in the beds. And so I tell people, well, I don't want to remove it if it's not tearing up your vegetables.
Are there screens under the beds? It's just a bed, right?
No, it's just. But the ground, the original ground, was pretty compacted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we put, you know, a good 20 inches of soil in it. So
I find that places like this, they do become little islands, because, you know, this is downtown Highland Park, and there are backyard gardens and lawns and things, but for example, some of the birds that I'm seeing landing here, I don't see these birds anywhere else. It's probably because there's nowhere else for them to go.
You should see it in summer.
Yeah.
When everything's in full bloom, and then you've got, you know, the bees do at work, and the birds and the butterflies you know, I've gotten acquainted with some of the. I didn't know hummingbirds were so territorial, you know. And their habits, and there's one in particular that is extremely friendly, and it likes to be filmed. Like, you could put your phone up to like 12 inches of it, and I guess it likes the camera or something.
Is that the one that's kind of iridescent green?
Yes.
That one? Okay,
yeah.
So I've seen those around.
Yeah. But there's one that was here the last two summers, and it was just, it was so curious. It just wanted to be up close to people. So yeah, we have fun. The kids have a great time with there's one now.
Oh yeah, there's a hummingbird bobbing around some lettuce and looking for something over there. It's got red on his chest there. So people have their own key to get in whenever they need to garden. Is that how it works?
We realized from the beginning the key idea was not the way to go. So we do a combination, which is has worked for the most part. You know, sometimes people pass it on to people they're not supposed to, but. We change it every when we feel it's gotten out of hand and people who aren't really supposed to have it. And so you can reset the combo, and we'll probably do that again this year, because we're having a new batch of people come in, and we'll reset the combos, and people can just
and then you just inform them. Yeah, that makes sense.
And you know, if you forget, you just call one of us, and the board members or organizers, and we, you know. But it's so much easier than the key. We're also contemplating doing a system where it's even more secure, where you do like either your thumbprint or it reads your iris, you know, your eye or something like that.
That sounds like something from the Da Vinci Code or one of those movies.
Well, you know there's been times when we just thought, well, this it's an expensive thing, but we've had tools show up missing and things that. Uh-huh. We've had times when it's unlocked and we're trying to find out who was here last, and mm-hmm. And so this would just make it really easy. It would close by itself. Mm-hmm. You know, you just put your thumb down and or your eye or something like that. I'm in favor of it because I'm the one who kind of keeps track of all the tools, and when we come up missing with, you know, tools, it's like we've got to replace those.
And, do people who garden here bring their own tools and put them in the shed?
No, our system, we have a very generous system. So basically we provide all the basics, like your hoses, nozzles.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Although lately we've slacked off on that, and I need to replace the majority of the hoses. Uh-huh. And but all the tools that you should need, you can bring. Some people choose to bring a special nozzle that they prefer or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, those things are mm-hmm. go from anywhere from $6 to like $20.
Yeah, but you still don't want them missing, you know?
Right. So we get the, you know, about the $12 ones, and you know, nothing lasts forever, so we've got to replace them. Yeah. And
do people ever need instruction on how to garden?
Yeah. We do have a mix of very experienced people. But the majority of are first-time gardeners, mm-hmm. so we feel good about that. And there are some gardeners that, you know, just are really good and they'll sometimes share with the other gardeners around them knowledge mm-hmm. and experience. We have one right now in particular, Rosemary, who's just really, really generous with her information. She's really knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. We also have a master gardener. She's... in the past, Millie Mason Moore, and she's moved on to bigger and better things. So we're in the process of selecting another master gardener, and I'd like to.
What does that mean, a master gardener? Somebody to advise the gardeners?
Somebody who's who's actually certified, has taken some kind of, you know, training, and have been, you know.
Who certifies people to be a master gardener?
Well, in Los Angeles, there's the. USC Extension thing, and it's very popular, and people mm-hmm. who join it, I think it's a 3 or 4 month course every Saturdays mm-hmm. for 3 or 4 months, mm-hmm. and we've had about 6 of our gardeners go through that course, and mm-hmm. so
that sounds like a good program.
It is.
Know, I noticed you've got like a big pile of compost over there, and probably different compost things for people to do to take their residue, you know, and make soil again. Do you have any rules in terms of chemical or pesticide use, or do you emphasize organic methods?
Absolutely, we're 100% our intention is to be 100% organic. Mm-hmm. We receive scraps from Good Girls Cafe.
Oh, okay. Girls Cafe is like one of the local restaurants right up the street here.
You know, and they work with us, and they use mostly organic produce in their food, is my mm-hmm. understanding. And people from the neighborhood come by and drop off their scraps, you know, vegetable scraps.
You have that pile, and then there's some other composters over the far end of the yard.
We have that pile, which is...
Let's walk and go take a look.
A couple stages of composting going on. So what you have is a stage that's in the process of being decomposed, and that's the large pile with the cover on it. And what we do is we just have an open... There's many... You've seen so many different styles of... You know, of containment to do it. We found that this open method pile is, there's no problems with rodents, mm-hmm. and you can see there's no smell to it.
Right.
And it just gives us, it allows us to turn it in different directions much easier. You can get 4 to 5 people working on it simultaneously mm-hmm. to help turn it. It's a little bit of work. And we found that these larger piles with this oxygen getting around it from all directions just decomposes so much quicker. Mm-hmm. They're very meticulous about how they layer it, and we have a rule or
there's a chart up on the wall. Why we do compost, what are the important elements of composting. So those are some directions and rules.
Right, so people who've come here for the first time maybe and haven't gotten the full explanation, can kind of get a sense of how we do it. And then here you have a small pile that's already pretty much decomposed. What we do from once it gets to that level is we sift it, so the bigger stuff goes back into this pile that hasn't finished decomposing.
You don't actually like chip anything up. You just pile stuff.
We do have a chipper and a little chipper.
And whenever we do our trees, or if I bring some trees from home that I pruned, or anybody else, we chip. And but the chips we actually use for the ground cover.
Right. Yeah. I can see the whole floor is covered with wood chips.
Yeah. So the walkways are all covered with ground cover, and.
But this is your main compost system right here.
This is mostly just. What we do is people, like I say, we get the greens, the scraps, and we layer it with just leaves. And we do a 50-50 as the chart says, where you do it like a lasagna. Put green stuff down, dry stuff, brown stuff, then green stuff, then brown stuff, then green stuff. And that heats up really quick. This pile gets really going really really good.
So they're trying to do more or less a scientific approach to composting. Who came up with your chart up on the wall about composting? Did you write that, Oscar?
No, I didn't. I'm not much for the rules and how to do things.
Not much for the rules. but there is a way that works, and that's basically what that chart's saying.
Yeah, this system we saw it at a school. We went to a school. They had a community garden. We talked to the person. We saw how their composting was going. Mm-hmm. Some of the other organizers wanted it very organized and to build, containers and out of plywood and keep everything. But we looked at what this person was doing at this local elementary school, and he gave us all the upsides on it. Mm-hmm. And we tried it, and it just seems that everybody likes to do it this way. And
well, it's very simple. I mean, basically what he's got is it's maybe 5x5 pile square and maybe 3-4 feet high, and there's like a mesh over it. And that's it, right?
Yeah.
But it was layered, and then do you water it down?
We throw water on it. The mesh isn't even necessary, and we just have it here, so we use it and throw
it
over. It's
very simple.
Yeah, and it works. It decomposes. We found that what people say is the normal time to go through this composting process, we've been able to cut it by at least a third.
So what is the time required for this material?
We'll turn this over, and this will be used in the plots in 2 months.
Really? Two months?
In 2 months.
So how long? There's another pile outside.
So that's been already around for, it started 2 months ago or a little longer, but it's already going into the...
So there's a
volunteer group led by Brenda, one of the organizers here, and she's got these volunteers that come every Thursday. They call it Sustainable Thursdays, and they work on the composting as well as other projects. They leave some of this. They don't want to give it all away to the gardeners and just like, here, you didn't have to do anything. Here's all this great organic compost. We want to leave a little bit of work for the gardeners to come
and
sift through.
Right.
Yeah, otherwise...
And then there's an old electrical spool with some, looks like, recycled chairs so they can sit under the shade after a hard day at work.
We're lucky this tree was here because in the summer it's where everybody hangs out when they're cooling off while in between, they're gardening.
And these are some commercial compost bins over here, right?
Yeah, these were donated by one of the organizers. He works at... what's that Warner Brothers studio where everybody goes?
Warner Brothers studio where everybody goes.
Anyways, he works at this place where they have all these props and stuff. They're actually trash cans.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, they'll work fine. And he's got your screen and your sifter here to get good soil.
We've got our shelving for, we'll bring that out so people could start getting their seedlings going. Mm-hmm. We need a greenhouse. We've got to get a greenhouse over here. That's one of our wish lists.
I've seen images of greenhouses where they basically took even plots like this with your wrought iron and made a frame and just covered it with this heavy-duty plastic.
We'll probably experiment with a couple things. I've got a friend who's got a lead on some really inexpensive Chinese-made ones that are really... they come in small boxes and so I said, yeah, we'll try
I had one that was like that size of that little shed, which is, I guess, 6x6 or so, and it got really hot in there. It was just a very cheap plastic, and it didn't last forever. This is an odd lot, so it's not exactly rectangular. This is a little corner here where you've got a lot of your tools stored.
Yeah, the end of the lot has an odd shape, mm-hmm. but I have plans for this, either having some kind of like outside kitchen area,
yeah.
with a sink where people can wash their stuff, uh-huh. and we could prepare food, mm-hmm. and
or if you have events, you could prepare food,
yeah, and stuff like that. But it's just one of the projects on my long list of projects, mm-hmm. and so.
Are you here every day, Oscar?
It seems like.
Yeah.
But it's by choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's by choice. I choose to. I really feel we're only halfway to where my vision of the garden is.
How many years has it been now since you started?
Well, it was like I say, we got the property in May of 2009.
So we're looking at about.
We're only 3 years.
3 years into it. Uh-huh.
This is the beginning of our fourth year of actual gardening.
Yeah.
Now, so we spent like almost a year before that trying to get mm-hmm. the property.
Are there people that have shared with you how it affected them? And
Absolutely. There's great stories. I mean, some of them don't necessarily share their feelings and mm-hmm. verbal. They don't articulate it, but you could see it in their For instance, Brenda Quintero, who started here with us and now runs the Sustainable Thursdays program. If you just seen from a visual perspective, she's lost so much weight, and her attitude and her just her energy and her
from just coming here.
From the time she came here to where she's at now, and she's just been accepted to a program up in Santa Cruz, and she's going to be taking being certified in some kind of sustainable program.
Well, I think those are all a real positive thing. It's funny how academia kind of trails behind the real world. There was a study about how, guess what? All of our problems are because we're not close to nature, and if you get the children back into the woods or in the garden,
yeah.
a lot of their social problems and psychological problems go away. I mean, we know that, you know.
It's real basic.
And I mean, this is like a island of sanity down here in downtown Highland Park.
Yeah, I was once asked by the councilman's office. They wanted to do a little thing that they put on their blog about why it was important to have the garden here. And
mm-hmm.
I says, I don't know that it's important, It just is a no-brainer.
Right.
I mean, I know it is important, but the thing to me was, it's just like, why not have it? Give me a mm-hmm. good reason why not to have, any piece of property that hasn't been used for 10 years or more, that the city says they plan on doing this or they plan on doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, in the meantime, allow the community some access. I have to say, though, with this particular group of organizers, I really feel what sets us apart from a lot of other places is the strong leadership of the group, and
mm-hmm.
Everybody's kind of like now after the 3 years or 3.5 years of kind of taking on other projects and have other priorities and stuff like that, and we'll have to replace them with some more good people, but it's been a real honor to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I had hoped to do when I started this thing, which is like get to know your community better and
mm-hmm.
get to know the people in your community and build community.
And it seems to have done that. And I appreciate you taking the time. We're all out of time for today. And I actually would like to come back maybe in a couple of months, and we'll maybe talk with some of the gardeners that are here.
Sooner if you like.
Tell me your website again. It's hpgarden.org. If people want to look at Oscar Eduardo's
not my garden.
Okay, not the garden that he helped to spearhead with other volunteers. He's very humble. The Lagro Allegro Community Garden. Thank you, Oscar.
Thank you, Christopher. All right. Good.